Strike of lightning. And if God ever wanted to smite a sinner, he couldn't do better than Michael Stirling. Michael Stirling, sinner. He could see it on a calling card. He'd have had it printed up. Even his was just that sort of black sense of humour, if he weren't convinced that it would kill his mother on the spot. Rake he might be, but there was no need to torture the woman who'd borne him. Funny how he'd never seen all those other women as sin. We still didn't. They'd all been willing, of course. You couldn't seduce an unwilling woman, at least not if you took seduction at the true sense of the word, and took care not to confuse it with rape. They had to actually want it, and if they didn't, if Michael sensed even a hint of unease, he turned and walked away. His passions were never so out of control that he couldn't manage a quick and decisive departure. And besides, he'd never seduced a virgin, and he'd never slept with a married woman. Oh, very well, one ought to remain true to oneself, even while living a lie. He had slept with married women, plenty of them, but only the ones whose husbands were rotters, and even then, not unless she'd already produced two male offspring, three if one of the boys seemed a little sickly. A man had to have rules of conduct, after all. But this... this was beyond the pale, entirely unacceptable. This was the one transgression, and he'd had many, that was finally going to blacken his soul, or at the very least, and this was assuming he maintained the strength never to act upon his desires, make it a rather deep shade of charcoal. Because this... He coveted his cousin's wife. He coveted John's wife. John, who, damn it all, was more of a brother to him than one of his own could ever have been. John, whose family had taken him in when his father had died. John, whose father had raised him and taught him to be a man. John, with whom... Oh, bloody hell. Did he really need to do this to himself? He could spend a senate cataloguing all the reasons why he was going straight to hell for having chosen John's wife with whom to fall in love. And none of it was ever going to change one simple fact. He couldn't have her. He could never have Francesca Bridgerton Stirling. But, he thought with a snort as he slouched into the sofa and propped his ankle over his knee, watching them across their drawing room, laughing and smiling, and making nauseating eyes at each other. He could have another drink. "I think I will," he announced, downing it in one gulp. "What was that, Michael?" John asked, his hearing superb as always, damn it. Michael produced an excellent forgery of a smile and lifted his glass aloft. "Just thirsty," he said, maintaining the perfect picture of a bon vivant. They were at Kilmartin House in London, as opposed to Kilmartin. No house, no castle, just Kilmartin, up in Scotland, where the boys had grown up. Or the other Kilmartin House in Edinburgh. Not a creative soul among his forebearers, Michael had often reflected. There was also a Kilmartin cottage, if one could call 22 rooms a cottage. Kilmartin Abbey and, of course, Kilmartin Hall. Michael had no idea why no one had thought to offer their surname to one of the residences. Stirling House had a perfectly respectable ring to it, in his opinion. He supposed that the ambitious and unimaginative Stirlings of old had been so damn besotted with their newfound earldom that they couldn't think to put any other name on anything. He snorted into his glass of whiskey. It was a wonder he didn't drink Kilmartin tea and sit on a Kilmartin-style chair. In fact, he probably would be doing just that if his grandmother had found a way to manage it without actually taking the family into trade. The old martinet had been so proud, one would have thought she'd been born a Stirling rather than simply married into the name. As far as she'd been concerned, the Countess of Kilmartin, herself, was just as important as any loftier personage, and she more than once sniffed her displeasure when being led into supper after an upstart marchioness or duchess. The Queen, Michael thought dispassionately. He supposed his grandmother had knelt before the Queen, but he certainly couldn't imagine her offering deference to any other female. She would have approved of Francesca Bridgerton. Grandmother Stirling would surely have turned her nose up upon learning that Francesca's father was a mere viscount, but But the Bridgertons were an old and immensely popular, and when the fancy took them, powerful family. Plus, Francesca's spine was straight, and her manner was proud, and her sense of humour was sly and subversive. If she'd been 50 years older, and not nearly so attractive, she would have made quite a fine companion for Grandmother Stirling. And now Francesca was the Countess of Kilmartin, married to his cousin John, who was 1 year his junior, but in the Stirling household always treated with the deference due to the elder. He was the heir, after all. Their fathers had been twins, but John's had entered the world 7 minutes before Michael's. The most critical 7 minutes in Michael Stirling's life, and he hadn't even been alive for them.
"What shall we do for our second anniversary?"
Francesca asked as she crossed the room and seated herself at the pianoforte. "Whatever you want," John answered. Francesca turned to Michael, her eyes startlingly blue, even in the candlelight. Or maybe it was just that he knew how blue they were. He seemed to dream in blue these days. Francesca blue, the colour ought to be called.
"Michael," she said, her tone indicating that the word was a repetition.
Sorry, he said, offering her the lopsided smile he so frequently affixed to his face. No one ever took him seriously when he smiled like that, which was, of course, the point. I wasn't listening.
"Do you have any ideas?" she asked.
For what?
For our anniversary.
If she'd had an arrow, she couldn't have jammed it into his heart any harder. But he just shrugged, since he was appallingly good at faking it. "It's not my anniversary," he reminded her.
"I know," she said.
He wasn't looking at her, but she sounded like she rolled her eyes. But she hadn't. Michael was certain of that. He'd come to know Francesca agonizingly well in the past 2 years, and he knew she didn't roll her eyes. When she was feeling sarcastic or ironic or sly, it was all there in her voice and the curious tip of her mouth. She didn't need to roll her eyes. She just looked at you with that direct stare, her lips curving ever so slightly, and... Michael swallowed reflexively, then covered it with a sip of his drink. It didn't really speak well of him that he spent so much time analysing the curve of his cousin's wife's lips.
"I assure you," Francesca continued, idly trailing the pads of her fingertips along the surface of the piano keys without actually pressing any into sound. "I'm well aware of whom I married."
"I'm sure you are," he muttered.
"Beg pardon?"
Continue, he said. Her lips pursed in a peevish crease. He'd seen her with that expression quite frequently, usually in her dealings with her brothers.
"I was asking your advice," she said, "because you are so often merry."
"I'm so often merry," he repeated, knowing that was how the world saw him. They called him the Merry Rake, after all, but hating the word on her lips, it made him feel frivolous, without substance. And then he felt even worse, because it was probably true.
"You disagree?" she inquired.
"Of course not," he murmured. "I'm simply unused to being asked for advice regarding anniversary celebrations, as it is clear I have no talent for marriage."
"That's not clear at all," she said.
"You're in for it now," John said with a chuckle, settling back in his seat with that morning's copy of the Times.
"You have never tried marriage," Francesca pointed out. "How could you possibly know you have no talent for it?"
Michael managed to smirk. "I think it's fairly clear to all who know me. Besides, what need have I? I have no title, no property." "You have property," John interjected, demonstrating that he was still listening from behind his newspaper. "Only a small bit of property," Michael corrected. "Which I'm more than happy to leave for your children, since it was given to me by John anyway." Francesca looked at her husband, and Michael knew exactly what she was thinking. That John had given him the property because John wanted him to feel he had something, a purpose, really. Michael had been at loose ends since decommissioning from the army several years back, and although John had never said so,